We are going live with Marianne Funes and I on Radio Edutalk. I'm just going to put that out as a wee tweet, and then we should get the show on the road.
Can I say hello to our million listeners now?
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's
hello, million listeners. Lovely to see you.
Yeah, and hopefully everything should be working now. So this is episode 13, not, as I think I put on the website, 14 of Loose Lenders on Radio Edutalk. My name is John Johnson, and with me is Marianne Funes. Good evening, Marianne.
Good evening, John. It's been a while because I've been messing up with my timings.
Yeah, we're doing okay. And we're both teachers. I'm a primary teacher and Marianne teaches in higher ed. And we both enjoy using the web or the internet to learn and teach. So our show is generally about all things internet and education. And the question we usually try to answer is the internet good or bad for education? And our answer is usually yes. But I think this time we'll be asking the question, are GIFs good or bad for education, culture and life? We're usually here on Edutalk on the first Wednesday of each month at about 8 o'clock UK time, and we hope to return on December the 5th. To say this episode's about GIFs. If you want to join in the conversation and you're listening live, you could tweet with the hashtag Edutalk or LLearn or mention Marianne or I. That's MDVFUNES or at John Johnson, JOHN, JOHNSTON. So, I think we've got a track record of talking about GIFs, Marianne.
But we haven't, I don't think we have here on our serious podcast.
Right, okay. So we talked a lot during DS106 about GIFs, and I guess you and I have both written and tweeted many, many words on GIFs, as including creating hundreds and hundreds of GIFs. So we can say we're fans, I think. But hopefully tonight we'll kind of go through some of the things about GIFs in a reasonably ordered way.
Let's do that. Let's be ordered.
Yeah. Can you remember when you saw you became aware of GIFs, Marianne?
DS106 would be. I mean, I kind of knew about them, but I would have judged them as something that I wouldn't get involved in.
Yeah. So I think early on you saw these the one that most people quote is that under construction GIF.
Yes.
Which you used to see in websites all over the place of a wee man with a shovel. It's a wee animation with a shovel man shoveling away with a sign telling you the website was under construction, or flames, or wee tiny images that flitter about. And to my mind, they're very associated with the sort of amateur internet of the early days, say GeoCities or play sites like this.
I was going to say CompuServe as well. Didn't they have the one?
I think that was before I was... before I was on the internet. I was a late adopter of technology. But a GIF, and I don't just skip, pass right over the huge controversy about whether you should pronounce it GIF or GIF. We're going to skip that one. It's basically a file format for images, which can show images on the internet, used by generally web browsers, and was originally one of, I think there was only two at that time. There was GIFs and JPEGs, which compress an image and make it look smaller. Nowadays, I think actually that GIFs aren't particularly efficient in making themselves smaller. They're also only use 256 colours generally, although there are very technical workarounds for that.
Do you want me to show off now?
Yeah.
I can show off. The Graphic Interchange Format, better known by its acronym GIF, is a bitmap image format, and the technique was patented in 1985 by CompuServe, who introduced the GIF on June the 15th, 1987.
Right, I don't even think I had a dial-up modem in those days, so I wouldn't have I probably hadn't actually ever touched a keyboard at that time.
Were you impressed that I remembered all of that so precisely?
I was, man. Yeah.
Nothing to do with Wikipedia.
I was
going to
say Wikipedia is not opening another tab. Yeah. but I don't know when they became popular or people began to use them for different things, but they're used for lots of things now. You can hardly pass a chat or communication tool that doesn't have GIFs in them. In fact, if you use Twitter or a phone or, you know, text messaging or all sorts of stuff, generally you can very easily search for and add a GIF to your messages that signal something. Very often reaction GIFs, or just things that are funny or people slapping their head or whatever, which you can use to communicate an idea or a feeling. So I think that's probably the most popular use of GIFs now.
And even you even get things the kind of software that is designed for businesses now give people access to that sort of searching for GIFs mechanism, like Slack, for example, and they have a little plugin, don't they, where you can search reaction GIFs for from Giphy. Because Giphy.com, one could argue, I guess, is the largest store these days of animated GIFs. And there is a little plugin, Slack. And of course, Slack is often used when in businesses these days. So that's interesting in itself, isn't it? Sort of the GIF is mainstream now.
Yeah. And right in, if I look at my phone and hit Twitter and go to write a tweet, it gives me a chance to upload images, but it also has a button which will let me to search for GIFs and add those. Again, I'm presuming from Giphy, because it's got an API that allows you to search and display GIFs. So I'm guessing nowadays that's the way most people use them. They're used, people make adverts and put them in social media. And I think
there's an interesting divide, isn't there? If you think about people who are not involved with social media or not involved with a technology in any way, they do use them. They often don't know what they're called, what they are. They just, you know, have it as a little thing on their phone and they start to use them. But they use what's already available. I guess the distinction is that would be the majority. And then there is the not minority, but there is a sort of smaller number of people that would go, oh, and I want to make them. And then they make them. Some make it, as you know, from scratch, and then some just use the sort of generators to make them. But I think so there is a kind of scale, isn't there, between just using them and then what you do with them. A lot of people just click to find something, as you say, I want to show a reaction and this is an easy way to do it.
Yeah. And I think we've both been more interested in the creation of them for other purposes than that. I don't think I very often do that. I might do if I was texting a family and want to annoy them. I might include a GIF in a text in my phone or a message, but that's about it. Anything I would put on Twitter, I would probably either be putting on to say, "Oh, look, I've made this. This is cool," or I made this to show you how something works or something does it. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's a whole interesting spectrum of the use of GIFs, and as you say, there's all sorts of ways to make them. It's, it, I guess, used to be more arcane than it is now, because there's many apps. You can search app stores, or you can find things in your phone which you can take a video and they will grab a few frames out of and make a GIF. And I guess one of the reasons that they're more popular than, say, video is that they do a couple of things. I mean, they embed easier in the internet in general than a video, but they also play straight away and they loop. And videos now, especially on more modern devices, you can't set them to autoplay. You can't, you know, so if you want to sort of really catch somebody's attention and you want your animation to start, a GIF's a good choice. And I think, again, the interesting thing on that is Twitter. When it gets GIFs, if you use a GIF in Twitter, it takes that GIF and it converts it to a wee video. Mm-hmm. And then sets it so that on Twitter it will autoplay, or it'll play when you roll over it or something like that. And they do that because a video makes a smaller file size. I think that's quite an interesting thing, that they like their GIFs, but they actually turn them into videos. So you could be getting, if you had a nice wee video and you had a reaction on it and you changed that into a GIF and you uploaded it to Twitter, Twitter then remakes it back into a video again. I'll bet with much poorer colours and all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah,
but it does not allow you to send a GIF on DM. I am sorry, but that is just beyond the pale.
Yeah, you'll have to send us a link. We'll send links. So I think we talked about GIFs, the use of communication, lots of people, but there's other ways, and I think perhaps educationally at least more interesting ways to use GIFs. And one of the ones I guess you and I have been most interested in is the idea of GIFs as art. And that again is a wee spectrum from, you know, very sort of crude, making something that's a joke or something like that, or a lot of art galleries, online galleries and things like that are actually encouraging people to make take their art and make GIFs out of them. And one of the things that we've taken part in was the Tate Art Gallery, which is probably
we've done several, haven't we? But that was, I think, the first one that we did together. The Tate Collectives, was that the sort of which is really that their art galleries that offer up some of their stuff they have, so that you can turn them into GIFs. And some of the things that people have made are just lovely, aren't they?
Yeah. So if you are listening along, I've just popped out a wee tweet which will link out to the Tate Art Gallery, the first competition, which is now sadly only available on the Internet Archive. But that, I mean, is a really interesting idea, that high art, or somebody that has high art, because this was art from the 1840s, it wasn't modern art, and I think that the protectors and curators of high art are asking people who are probably a bit more rough and ready about their art to take these and remix them and mess about with them.
I had another one. There was, you know, the Halloween. At Halloween, often different art galleries put up things for people to GIF. And I did one, I think, last year. And I was playing around with, you know, as we do, with, you know, I picked an image and I won something. And it was like the first time ever, you know, basically I just won the right to be put in, you know, whatever amazing archive this place, I don't even remember now what it was. But I was so excited, you know, because it was going to be in a kind of proper art space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are people, artists now, who would call themselves full-time artists, academics, who are using the GIF format to make art, sometimes remixing things, sometimes making stuff from scratch, which kind of takes us into this idea. I mean, we've talked about how you make gifts, and it's a series, I guess, of still frames. So the easiest way you could do that is in a piece of software is to get a series of images and glue them together in some way so they play as frames. And that's how a GIF, so rather than take it out of a video, say, you can actually make it frame by frame, a wee bit like old cartoonists would make something. You know, you could paint a letter or something like that on the first frame and then move it slightly or change it slightly and build up an animation like that.
The first one I did like that was I was a submission to something, either one of these competitions, and it was a flower, and the image, that was the original flower, and I had the idea that I would make it wilt. So it would basically, I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but I never forgot that, you know, because it's such a simple thing, right? Because all you have to do is several frames that just start to go a bit lower, and then it runs so that it just wilts. And my goodness, it was hard work. It gives you a different perspective for all the efforts that, you know, proper animators make.
Go through. And I think that one of the things, I mean, I've noticed this with children doing animation, if they're even just using models and making a video animation, it's the number of frames. Because to make something that lasts a second long, you maybe need even a very sort of slow or crude change, you maybe need 12 frames per second. So if you want an animation to last 3 seconds, that's 36 pictures you've got to draw. And I guess a lot of these, you know, GIFs are made by taking an image and changing it slightly, so you've got something to start with, and then you can move it on and change it, and you can build up a series of frames in a piece of software. And I would reckon most people who are fairly serious about this will use either Photoshop or Fireworks or GIMP, which is the Linux cross-platform Photoshop replacement, and it can get quite complicated. And I think educationally, one of the interesting things about doing that sort of thing is that it teaches you a lot about image editing and about moving image and things like that, and, you know, all sorts of things about layers and effects and all bits and pieces about whichever software package you're using.
Illustrator, some people use that, don't they?
They do the frames
on Photoshop, and then they move on for the I guess it has better animation tools.
I prefer Fireworks because it very clearly separates the sort of layers in an image and the frames in a way that makes it more sense to me than Photoshop. And one of the simplest way you could make a GIF would be have a background image which stays the same in every frame, and then just have something else that moves across it. That's quite a common way of editing something. So you might take an image in Photoshop and select something out of it and move it into a new layer and leave the background, and then move the top one across in your GIF.
You're reminding me of all the different tools and the different ways which, you know, one can do it. And of course, then we go back to something that we've talked about before in relation to other tools and to other things, which is this whole thing about, you know, to using a generator, something that just automates the process, versus something, you know, versus doing them from scratch, which is what you're talking about when you were using Photoshop or we're using Fireworks, etc., which you know, you can do more when you do it that way, but also the sort of learning process is more we've spoken about this before, haven't we, when we've talked about generators? And
yeah, and I think what I guess if you've been around on the internet for a while, one of the things that used to be important was file sizes. You don't want to wait 20 minutes to see a trivial animation. And one of the things I always thought about as a skill for creating animating GIFs was make it look as good as possible, but balancing that out as with a file size. And I mean, just the other week there, I was away with my class, actually, with some of the kids in my class in an outdoor centre, and we were walking through up in the north of Scotland, we were up, or the northwest, we were up walking through a wood doing some orienteering, and the beech trees, they were gorgeous, and the leaves were all falling gently in the breeze and things, and using my phone, I took up one of these live photos, and I took this live photo of the woods and the trees, but when I came back home, loading that up into photos in my Mac, I found that I could actually export this thing as a GIF. And when I exported it, it was 640 by 479 pixels, and it was 12.9 megabytes. It was enormous. And what I did was I took it into Fireworks. Using layers, I stilled off a block of waving branches and things, because all I wanted was the wee leaves, golden leaves drifting down. I shrunk it a wee bit to about 600 pixels, took it down to 128 colours, and set the loss, I think, to 20%, and it was 800 kilobytes then after that.
And beautiful, may I say. I did see that on the stream when you posted. I thought it was snow, not leaves.
It's just the leaves. It was just one of those days where the trees are just falling down, and the place was beautiful. It was a really nice, mossy, craggy wood with, I say, lots of beech trees and pine trees. But I'm really kind of that. I get a lot of pleasure out of doing that, making something look nice but making it efficient. So I think that's, for me, one of the pleasures and learning things about GIFs, is this idea of, you know, digging in a wee bit to the software and playing with it.
My thing is with, I used to do quite a lot. I don't now, I mean, we may get to talk about my sorrow at losing Photoshop, so I no longer use Photoshop, but I used to love the color things. Michael Branson Smith, he showed me how to do all the different colors when you're trying to, you know, when you're about to save your GIF, and I could spend hours trialing and testing and looking at different options of, you know, so much color, some of these, pick this color, I'll put that one in there and combine all of this. It was just lovely.
You can get
I used to enjoy that.
Really nice. Sort of, you can turn something into a sort of art by reducing the colours of it, and you begin to get abstract shapes and things coming out, which I think is really, really interesting, an interesting way to play around with this. Quite often changing something makes that, you know, you can make something cruder, but it pulls something out, which I guess is one of the ways that people use GIFs, is maybe from the film point of view. So you can use a GIF, take a GIF out of a video to isolate something, and when you isolate it, then it's a way of doing some film education, how things move and what happens. And I remember when I started making animated GIFs, I started watching films really carefully to look for places where the camera didn't move, so that I could get something that would look really nicely. But that, I mean, that's the putting the cart before the horse, but it can be used to look at you know, a wee short section of video or movie and see what happens. And I've seen some academic blogs which use that to analyse or to talk about the analysis of different movies in a really quite interesting way, which is, I say, another way where people are using GIFs as a tool to look at things.
You can make beautiful. There was somebody using it with Chinese cinema. Was a link with somehow the University of Mary Washington, I think, and Jim Groom had gone into the film studies another department and taught them, and they were basically using them just for that, and it was sort of Chinese cinema gifts just broken one by one by it was. I have no idea about the films, never watched the films, but the gifts were just beautiful.
As I said, I think it's quite an unusual way to do something like that, but it can be quite a powerful way to isolate a piece of video. And
what you can do, of course, is then, you can not just isolate as is, but you can bring them closer. You can do various things that, to highlight the particular elements, which... You cannot do when you are just taking a clip of a little section of a film. I guess a kind of taking it one step on the isolating things is the idea around cinemagraphs. Well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so where you're not just taking a few frames of a film, but you're actually almost taking, one tiny element of one frame and letting that move, and then everything else is still. And they seem, I learned to my cost, they seem so easy, and I found them the hardest things to do.
Yeah,
I love them, but I never could find an easy way to do them.
Just again, there's an awful lot of learning about the images in there, I think, when you do something like that.
It was in my early days. I did a Buñuel film. I took a thing and I wanted to isolate a scene and a particular thing, and oh my goodness! And of course, the first time you do it, that's when you learn the most often. And there was this thing, and I just could not get it to work, and I had to ask for help. And I would try again, and I was determined. And the amount of time I spent on something so tiny.
Yeah.
I think I just wanted to have a couple, so that the image was a couple looking out of a window. And I just wanted to isolate so that all you could see were the eyes of the woman moving up and down, which I thought it was a wonderful idea. But my God, it was a big old effort to do it.
Yeah, and that I think is this point: you're looking for the camera not moving, or you're going to get into all sorts of trouble lining things up. Yeah.
Exactly.
Just another educational way that. That GIFs are used is that there's quite a lot are used to as explanations, and I was really interested in a couple of sites. There's a Reddit educational GIFs, and there's also educational-gifs .tumblr.com, which I don't know if it's actively adding things. But what they've got is maybe explaining different types of science, showing how different things work in a way that you can watch how to moonwalk, which might not be too scientific. how crankshafts work, and because you can sort of just show something repeating very easily on a web page. It makes it a really nice way to show something. Just all sorts of stuff. So I think that's quite a good use of GIFs is to do you know, to break something down or show something repetitively so that you can watch it and watch it and watch it and see how it works.
In fact, you've given me an idea with that, you know, that sometimes explaining not necessarily just science or just, you know, moonwalking, but that actually sometimes explaining processes, you know, can be done. It kind of like people do screen, you know, mm-hmm. you do a sort of screencast, don't you? And you walk people through. And I've seen Martin Hoxie, I think, mm-hmm. he does some of those where he, and then loops them as a GIF. So then you don't have to click anything. You can just keep watching it, and you all, so I click there and I click there, and the, okay, so then, and then it starts again and it starts again. So then there is a point, then I guess I used to the repetition because it helps you understand.
Yeah, and again, I've used them quite often to show some process on my phone because I can just take a series of screenshots of something happening and either walk people through it or say, good grief, look at this. That seems quite a useful way of using GIFs is actually to show somebody process, or also to do as part of a job I do, I explain a write help for blogging for teachers in Scotland, and I quite often will use a GIF to show something, you know, I'll write it and then I'll just show the wee GIF instead of having a static illustration. You can use it like that, so that's I think a nice way to use GIFs there. And
I guess what we're trying to do is to say to all the listeners on EduTalk, it's not just about making pretty pictures and funny things. Sometimes you can use it for serious purposes, and it can actually have a very, you know, it can be a medium to use that's even better than video or a still image for certain things like the ones we are discussing. I guess that's what we are trying to say, isn't it? That it's not just all fun. Sometimes it's very serious.
Yeah, definitely, and it could be serious science. Or the other one that I've seen recently is a post by a guy, Mike Caulfield, in America, who's doing an awful lot of work around teaching university students about news and checking things, checking sources. Obviously, at the moment, there's a huge problem with the idea of fake news and people, you know, huge amounts of fake news being produced on the internet and shared. And I think for quite a while, he's been posting articles about how to do checks and things, and more recently he's been using GIFs to show the process. And I think one of the things he's using that for is to actually show how quick it is to do some checking on the internet, that the idea that you know, you need an afternoon in the library and spend ages searching and all the rest of it is not true. It can be a few seconds to find out if a site is likely to be to be an authentic or a useful piece of news, or it's about something else, and I think that's a really nice use of GIFs, because then you're not only showing, you're using the medium to show how easy it is to do something.
Yes, because I guess it's that, so that's not just about learning something, because the medium helps you learn something because it repeats, but it also, in this case, it's saying, look, you know, if I can show you this thing in a tiny moment, how long does it actually take you to check? You know, if you don't check, it's just because you're lazy. that's kind of what the message that the medium is sending, because we think of GIFs as things that are so quick, so small, and so on, that if you can show, here is how you could do check something that isn't, you know, it's an interesting use. It really is interesting. I've not seen them. I must go look to see what he's doing.
I've just tweeted out a link to a post which he did very well. And I guess I'm just watching my time. One of the interests that I find is with teaching primary school children is that they can have a lot of fun making, say, an animated Christmas card. And while they're doing that, you can actually teach them quite a lot of ICT skills. You know, they're maybe learning about layers and about lots of image editing and whatever device they're doing while they're just considering they're having fun. And then they might be learning about publishing that if they're putting it onto a blog or passing it on to their teacher to put on Twitter or something like that. I think that it's quite an interesting, because GIFs, again, are quite simple, or can be quite simple.
I learned some iPhone tricks from you that you were using with your little ones. You were showing them how to make quick GIFs and showing how they could on the phone, and you tweeted something, and it was really helpful because you know I looked at that. I never thought of doing this, and it's true. It's sort of, you go and then you try, and effectively by me playing so that I could make this GIF that you'd sent through that you were working with your kids on, I actually learned some features of my iPhone that I didn't know it had.
Yeah, well, we use iPads in class, and when I originally got them, I wasn't desperately convinced, because I'm used to using sort of graphic applications on a computer rather than the iPad, but there's quite a lot of interesting ways that you can do that. And very recently, there's always been a useful app on the phones called Workflow. And it's the people who made it were bought up or incorporated. Apple took the company over, and it's turned into this app called Shortcuts, which comes with the system. But one of the most sort of interesting things is there's various tools for making animated GIFs in there, so you can take a video or a series of images, or one of those photo bursts that you can do by just holding the if you hold the button down in the camera, it just takes lots and lots of photos. So you can take one of those and throw it into Shortcuts, and it will churn out an animated GIF for you, which you can then use. So for my kids, they quite often use the Brushes app, which is a really nice free app that if people have seen David Hockney's work, he's making in his old age, he's making a lot of art on his iPad now. He started off on a phone, and this is the app he uses. But we found, because you can use layers and move the layers, that it's a good tool for making sort of animated cartoony things, and export them as images. And we used to use an app called 5 Seconds GIF, which is,
I used to use that.
It's limited, but my kids are still using it, but it's limited to 5 seconds long. So I'm hoping we can use Shortcuts, which will teach the children maybe not, a bit of process about how things work in computing. It's not quite programming, but you can say, take in the images, we choose how many frames, and we put it out on a GIF, which I think is a useful thing.
Yes, I think that is a very useful thing, because it's interesting and quick ways in which they can learn something that actually they can then use for something else. So it's a generative thing, so that is quite a helpful thing. The what I remember with the five second app had the same issues, I think, when you of size that you were talking about earlier, that actually I used to generate them in the 5 app, and then I would put them in Photoshop to do various bits and bobs to make it tidier.
I think one of the problems from an educational I guess, computing background or idea with mobile devices and tablets and modern applications is they very often hide things like that from you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So finding ways.
But there are some now, and in fact, we should post on the notes. We should post a link to Ryan Seslow's resources,
mm-hmm.
because he has some wonderful resources, because he's been doing quite a lot with combining apps together and making his art via combining apps together and then putting it all together. I think he does use Illustrator for putting everything together, he's got a whole set of wonderful resources, and there are some lovely apps in there that that really can produce amazing things very easily. The reason for me remembering that is there are some, and I remember picking up from there, that actually do make a thing out of teaching you just, so how big do you want it to be, how many frames, and so it actually runs through the whole process that we might do manually in Photoshop. So that, you know, this is a good one for posting on Tumblr. This is, so therefore it has to be so much, so big, and all that. So you learn about file size. You learn about how, if you take this out and you add this, it makes it bigger or smaller. And there are some apps that don't hide, that make a thing out of you learning about those things, which of course for educational use might be helpful.
Yeah, yeah. I think it may be worth mentioning that, I mean, Ryan is an artist. He works with mixed media. He works with paint. He works with concrete. He works with digital stuff. And I've actually seen him put things on Twitter saying, "I made this on the way on his commute in the subway,
yes.
using his phone." And he seems to value that as much as.
He introduced me to now you've made me remember, I'm going to have to go back to it. He's using something called Assembly quite a lot.
I've got children that really, we've not done any animation with it, but in school,
well,
they've got children who really enjoy using Assembly.
So he put me on. He did one of these tweets where he went, "I made this in Assembly app, awesome, look at this," right? And I was traveling into London, and I thought, well, look, you know, I'll just download it, you know, whilst I go traveling, you know, going into London. Do you know I miss my bloody stop?
Yeah.
I was so into it. I was making this because you can make little icons and you can turn them and it's wonderful. And I was so into it that I actually missed the stop I was going. And I remember tweeting at him saying that was just not good enough to make me miss my
stop.
My meeting, because I was playing with the Assembly app.
Yeah, no, as I say, I've got one or two children who are really interested in it. I guess you'd call it a vector image editor, as opposed to a bitmap one, but you can still convert them to bitmaps and then turn them into GIFs. But the idea of being able to change shapes and rotate and reflect and all the rest of it, and it's huge on layers. Which I think, to my mind, working with layers on an image is just a really educational process. You know, because you start thinking about layers and moving things backwards and forwards to get different effects, and how things, different positions, and how big something is. I think it's both. To me, it feels very much like simple programming. You know, this idea of that, and I think it's really good, and it's for children, and I find it really interesting that some children just really take to it, that, you know, are maybe not stars in other areas in the classroom, but in that particular, they just are miles ahead of all other kids in the class, and I don't know what it is that helps them pick it up or makes it so interesting to them, but it's a fascinating process, and I think it's really worth doing.
I guess that's true. I suppose I never think about it, because I can't remember, you know, when it was the time when I didn't know some of the things I do know. But actually, as you were talking, I'm thinking, yes, I guess I can see, because if you don't order things in the right way and create with the Assembly app, everything ends up a mess. But yeah. once you work out the kind of, then you can create beautiful things. And of course, that's the process that then got me missing my stop, because I was like, oh, and then, oh, look, and then. Because there's the fascination of how can you make it, you know, so that it looks just so through. And in the, and you have to get them in the right order, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I can see how you can. Yeah. That's a sort of basic skill needed for programming, at least. Yeah, that's very good. Oh no, we're going over our half hour again.
We're way over, and I'm going to have to wrap up reasonably soon, as I've got something in the oven for dinner. But before we go, I've just tweeted out a link to what I think is one of the most interesting, if slightly not for the squeamish, I hope I've just tweeted the right link, actually. possibly did I just mess that up?
Let's see, I'll click on it.
Oh, no, I've got one here, yeah. So I've just tweeted out a link to hard-boiled GIF. And this is... a guy, Michael Branson Smith, and I say out in the tweet, it's not for the squeamish. And
no, it isn't, is it?
But this is something that's done with Photoshop, and just fascinating. He's taken a picture from a comic and animated it using, I think, the photo warp tool in Photoshop, which is a really powerful one. And Photoshop kind of remains, I guess, the most, for doing the most subtle things in GIF animation.
Don't get me going now because you're gonna burn your dinner if you get me going with Photoshop now.
I just because you've used Photoshop a lot, and I thought we probably should talk about, because. Again, educationally, I was talking to somebody online the other day in another space and talking about image editors and mentioning the fact that back in the 90s, I think I got 5 copies of the whole Macromedia suite, including Flash and Fireworks and all sorts of things we didn't use, for my 10-year-olds for 40 quid or something like that. It was amazingly cheap. And you used to be able to get software to use educationally to learn very cheaply. And I'm just thinking then about,
and you could actually buy the software. Of course, that's part of the thing now, is that, you know, you have this whole membership thing, so you're paying yearly and you're not you know, you don't own the software and so on. And they do have, you know, educational discounts, but they're not that cheap. And they're often time for some commercial organizations, they're not that cheap, and they are not, you know, and they're time bounded. So you only get it for a year and then you have to pay the full amount.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is quite problematic when you're thinking about using things like Photoshop, etc., you know, for educational purposes. It's and I've been trying to look for alternatives for Photoshop, and really your only real alternative is GIMP, that is accessible, and that but of course, you know, once you've got used to using Photoshop, going back to GIMP is really not it's not pleasant.
No, it's an open source tool, but I'm guessing it's not as polished by a long shot
what's really interesting, because I was doing a bit of research, there are alternatives like Affinity Photos, and there were a couple of others that I think you may even have suggested to me. But what happens is they don't have animated GIF support.
No, they don't do animation. There's an awful lot of really nice image editors.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange to me that the sort of almost the cheap end of the image market would be your animation GIF, if you think of the poor wee guy thrown over the rubbish over his shoulder saying site under construction, and it's kind of low end. But to do that you quite often need quite high-end software, or, you know, to do it with a deal of support and things, is you need something like Photoshop, or say my favourite is Fireworks, and Fireworks is owned by Adobe, but they have stopped developing it. And I'm noticing as I upgrade my operating system that it gets rougher and rougher, and things have stopped working. And I've got to make a choice between upgrading it, my software again, or keeping Fireworks working, or learning something else. which I guess.
But the question is, what is the something else?
Yeah, well, it would be Photoshop, I guess.
But say that you didn't want to be paying the kind of, you know, ongoing membership, and you wanted to say, well, I'm going to buy, you know, some software. There really isn't an alternative. And I've seen things, because I've got Affinity Photo and I like it. And really the only thing that it's missing, you know, is to have animated GIF support. And I think it's really interesting because I'm not the only one, you know, consistently you read in the forums, it's like, why don't you have this? And why don't you? And you should have animated GIF support. And I don't know why. I don't know what the technical reason, if any, is that a lot of these photo editors don't have, when actually it would really give them an edge.
Yeah. Now, there is one alternative. It would be to export a huge series of still images from one of these applications. You know, so you make an image, you tweak it, and then you pull those together in some other piece of software to make your GIF. And I wouldn't like to talk about animated GIFs without touching on my second favourite GIF app application, which is one called GIFsicle.
Yes, I've never used it. Go on.
And GIFsicle, which is, I think, made to rhyme with popsicle, as in the lollipop or whatever, is a command line GIF tool. But it's very interesting because you can automate processes. So you could take a bunch of still pictures, and using the command line, you can convert those into an animated GIF. Now, that a lot of people are put off by the interface and things. But it's very interesting because you can use it. If you get another system that's pulling in images from somewhere automatically, you can then automatically create GIFs and things, which is quite an interesting thing to do. And you could write a very simple program, because I'm certainly not a programmer, but I can get my Raspberry Pi, for instance, to take photographs of the sky and tack them together to produce animated GIFs, which
I've seen your Raspberry Pi GIFs on Tumblr.
Yeah, and so I think I've made over 80,000 now GIFs, but the Raspberry Pi just sits there and churns them out now.
I haven't talked about your Raspberry Pi for a long time, because I had this idea I was going to create this cartoon series with your poor Raspberry Pi, just working up there like a slave.
Well, it is. It's a wee slave of mine, I guess.
Automated GIFs.
So if anybody was desperately interested in GIFs, looking at GIFsicle, which is a free piece of software, and the only cost is probably a bit of your sanity learning something about the command line on a computer, but it's very useful to do that. I think, Mariana,
we should stop because you've got dinner ready.
Yeah, I can hear people arriving in the house who are going to be looking to be fed. I think we've had a nice diet of animated GIFs. I certainly always enjoy talking about them, and it's hard to find an audience sometimes. but I know you will always indulge the same interest there as me. So
we should tweet that thing that Ryan sent through for inviting contributions for animated GIFs.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find the
this So this is CNUY, isn't it?
Yes, C. It's NetArt. Let's just see. NetArt. So netart.commons.gc. We can put it in the notes, can't we?
Yeah.
But it's basically NetArt open call for submissions, and it's effectively asking for submissions for. You know, animated GIFs and other things as well, but animated GIFs amongst other things around, you know, the net, what loosely described as net art, which I guess is the sort of thing that that Ryan Seslow does, you know, with, I guess, you know, what does count as internet art, you know, I guess, you know, it's quite wide open, isn't it? But The purpose of exhibiting, I'm just reading from the thing, the purpose of exhibiting submissions in various categories displays a platform for creative and experimental methods of pedagogy. Please consider how your work will contribute to a larger whole that will be archived for teaching, reference, and posterity. See, I'm gonna send something in. I wanna be archived for posterity.
Yeah. So you can have an infinite loop that just goes on forever. Yeah, that'd be great. Super.
Anyway, I thought it might be nice, you know, we can put that in the notes, so in case people want to start to get into this idea of, you know, making GIFs and submitting some things, that's a nice place to submit because it's an educational thing.
Okay, that's a good place to end, I think. We'll put the show notes together over the next couple of days and do a bit of editing on the audio and have it out. So I think I'll just hang up and say goodnight now, folks. Cheers.
Good night.